Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. Recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Wednesday at 9 p.m. RPM's about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Each week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in New York City. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, what's up, New York City? This is Amy Wilson. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute, live on WBAI. We are a socialist radio show and podcast from members of New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The Democratic Socialists of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 90,000 members nationwide. NYCDSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 7,000-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. Once again, my name is Amy Wilson. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a member of North Brooklyn DSA. I'm here tonight with my great comrade, Jack Devine, and we have a wonderful show ready for you. It's our second annual post-May Day labor movement extravaganza. From coast to coast, workers are organizing to win, making gains, and reckoning with disappointments and challenges. On today's show, we're joined live by journalist and organizer Chris Brooks and by our radio comrades Jacob and David, hosts of Valley Labor Report, Alabama's only union talk radio show. From workers at the heart of New York's cultural and media worlds to mine workers on strike in Alabama, it's all on the table for tonight's show. And we'll be taking your calls, so please get your questions ready. But first, the headlines with Desiree.
My name is Desiree Joy Frias. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm on the organizing committee for the Bronx Upper Manhattan branch. Here are the headlines. In local news, the Census Bureau announced the New York will lose one congressional seat. The state fell 89 people short of the needed population count to keep its current seats in the last census. Boosted by an infusion of federal aid and a state budget that raised taxes on the wealthy, Mayor de Blasio proposed a $98.6 billion budget for fiscal year 2022, the largest in city history. The mayor's executive budget will now be debated and amended by the city council before it can be passed on July 1st. Mayor de Blasio's proposed budget includes $377 million to make free preschool available to all three-year-olds by 2023. It also includes $500 million for testing and tutoring to help students catch up after a year of academic disruptions due to the pandemic. Governor Cuomo's effort to cover up nursing home deaths went on for longer than previously reported. AIDS prevented the state's health officials from releasing the death toll for at least 5 months. New York State still does not have a spending plan to reach the emissions targets set 2 years ago in the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. Environmental activists are concerned that energy-intensive Bitcoin mining in New York State could undermine the state's climate goals. More than 1,000 NYU graduate students are striking for higher wages, better health care, and a reduced police presence on campus. Elections. A woman who interned for Scott Stringer in 2001 accused the mayoral candidate of sexually harassing and abusing her while she worked for him. The Working Families Party and a slew of progressive politicians have since withdrawn their endorsement of Stringer. Brittany Ramos de Barros, who is running for the 11th Congressional District in Staten Island to unseat Republican Congressmember Nicole Malliotakis, has raised a substantial sum of money and is receiving significant out-of-state support. Gotham Gazette covered the primary in City Council District 35, which is framed as a two-way race between Michael Hollingsworth, a tenant organizer and DSA-endorsed candidate, and Crystal Hudson, a former Laurie Cumbo staffer. Bradley Tusk, the founder of the lobbying firm that is managing Andrew Yang's mayoral campaign, also manages Tusk Ventures, a venture capital firm for tech startups, many with businesses and regulatory matters already before the city. While several candidates running for Manhattan DA claim they will shorten sentences, only two, civil rights attorney Tahani Abushi and public defender Eliza Orlins, told New York Focus they would never seek sentences longer than 20 years. Andrew Yang received the endorsement of a coalition of Orthodox Jewish sects in Brooklyn. Assemblymember Simcha Eichstein and Councilmember Kalman Yeager, who both represent predominantly Orthodox communities in Brooklyn, also endorsed Yang for mayor.
Thank you, Desiree. Our headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA's Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethorn.nyc.
Yo, it's Good New York. I'm Jack Devine, he, him pronouns. And if you are a regular listener to Revolutions Per Minute here on WBAI, you certainly know that here in New York City, as in many places around the country, there is a strike wave brewing among graduate workers. Last week, I visited the picket line at New York University, where grad workers are striking for higher wages, healthcare, and workplace democracy at NYU. Let's hear what they had to say.
And we saw the way that this arrogant, capitalist, today, fighting for your basic demand, is an inspiration. It should be a spark to many, many academics and other workers throughout the country.
Yeah!
My father was a member of the United Auto Workers. That's when the union was started at a place called Republic Air out on Long Island. And when they went on strike, they called everyone on strike to defend the picket lines against the strike breakers in the staff. And against the police, whose job it is to break the strike and to carry out the racist oppression of this society. And they fought for an industrial union, a union of one employer, one union, to bring the power of the workers out, to enforce their demands with their class power against a very arrogant enemy. And I was a telephone worker out on the West Coast for a long time. And we had a strike back in 1983, a nationwide strike, where we had to defend our picket line against strike breakers who rammed their vans into the pickets, who broke people's kneecaps, who tried to break our strike. But we won the strike. I think that what you're doing here looks like, and I think it is, part of the beginning of a new labor upsurge.
You just heard from striking graduate workers at New York University, and this is our second annual post-May Day labor show for Revolutions Per Minute. And we're thrilled to be joined live by Chris Brooks, as well as by Jacob and David, hosts of Valley Labor Report out of Alabama. Say hi, everyone.
Hey, how are y'all?
Hey.
So, you know, we're going to get to Chris in a bit. He's been a guest here on Revolutions Per Minute, and we're very happy to have him back. But before we do, Jacob and David, you are both new to the show here, but definitely not new to radio. So we want to give you a chance to introduce yourselves to the audience and ask a question that we always love to ask of our guests on the show. What are the social forces that brought you into organizing? David, if you want to go first.
Yeah. Hey, what up, New York City? My name is David Story. I go by he, him pronouns. I am president of the Machinist Union, Local 44 in Decatur, Alabama. One of the founding members of the Industrial Workers of the World in the Huntsville branch. And just recently, I guess in the past 6 months, a new member of the North Alabama DSA, which is kind of strange for me because I consider myself an anarchist, but the DSA is doing such great work that I could not help but join in, and it, you know, and it's been great. It gives me an outlet for organizing in a different area.
We're very, oh, Jacob, go ahead.
No. Yeah. I DSA's work, and I really like the folks in DSA in North Alabama and what they're doing, and you know, the social forces that brought me into organizing were, I think, the same. Capitalism, really. I wouldn't have put it in those terms when I kind of started on the path that I'm on, and I didn't go right into labor organizing, but you know, working in the service. Have to toil in while our bosses have two houses and they only show up, you know, where the owner that I worked for, he had two houses and I only saw him over the 3 years that it really pushed me into trying to do something, and ultimately I landed on labor organizing, and I'm really happy doing that. And I think, you know, I think that unions and unionism is working people can improve their lives today.
Well, Jacob, I think we might have missed a couple of those things that you said, unfortunately. You cut in and out, but I think you were hitting on something that a lot of people have experienced to get involved in organizing, because you're you're working hard, and your boss is on your back, and they have it all. They got all the money. That's what I got out of what you're saying, and it's great to also have David here on the show, because I think he's probably not the only anarchist on Revolutions Per Minute. I'm not gonna tell anyone's ideology or whatever. But it's, I think, and someone, it seems like you've been in the fight in the labor movement in Alabama for such a long time. So we're really happy to get your perspective on the air. We're going to jump now to our NYC DSA comrade, Chris. Chris, like, what's been up with you since your last appearance on RPM, I believe, a year ago? And like, what are you most interested to discuss on the show tonight? Because a lot is happening in the labor movement.
Well, hey everybody, thanks for having me, Chris Brooks, he, him pronoun. So what's different since the last time we talked is that I've changed jobs. So I was previously a staff writer and labor educator at Labor Notes, and now I am the mobilization director at the News Guild of New York. I love Labor Notes. It's one of the most important labor organizations in the country, but I'm really happy to be back in the field working with media workers to fight the boss and build the labor movement. And as for what I'm excited to talk about, so first of all, I'll say I'm a big fan of David and Jacob's show, which also has a great YouTube channel. Just plug that for them. All of our listeners can't see me, but I'm actually wearing my Valley Labor Report hat right now that I got from donating to them. So just excellent, excellent radio in Alabama. So I'm sure that David and Jacob are probably worn out from talking endlessly about the heartbreaking union loss at the Amazon plant in Bessemer, Alabama. But that loss actually, follows a string of high profile losses across the South, including Volkswagen in Tennessee. We had Boeing in South Carolina, Nissan in Mississippi. So I'm really interested to hear from both David and Jacob about, eager for them to share with a New York City audience what they think the lessons we should be learning from those kinds of campaigns and what is it really going to take to win in the South, which is just absolutely crucial for the labor movement since the South has long been used as a high exploitation, low wage zone to keep workers down, not just in the South, but all across the country and across the world, really. So I'm excited to be here and to talk with all of you today.
Well, I think that's a question that's on everybody's mind. I think it's been on the question of trade unionists, of socialists, of we have anarchists here. Anyone who cares about the power of the working class, wants an organized working class. The South has been a very difficult and hard place to organize for a variety of reasons. And I'm sure we're going to dive into it. And I want to give our friends from down South the chance to chime in on that, because they probably know, and they definitely know a lot more than me.
Yeah, well, Jack, and I hope y'all can hear me better now. I think David, and this is a unfortunately not the best, it's not what everybody would like to hear, but David on one of our shows a couple weeks ago said that if anybody had the perfect way to organize, every workplace would be organized by now, and so there's really just a lot of unanswered questions. From where I was sitting, it sure looked like they were running a good campaign. They had poultry workers out there talking to them every day, almost 24 hours a day. They had workers in the spotlight. They didn't have as many, and there were some, there were some criticisms of what they did and what they didn't do. But ultimately, I really think that the best answer is to try and fight. Even the people that have had criticisms of the campaign have said that you're going to lose more than you win. And we're, like they said when I was playing basketball in middle school, like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And I think that we've just got to take a lot of shots. I mean, I don't know how David or Chris feel about that, but I think we just got to take a lot of shots,
Calculated shots.
Calculated shots. Yeah. But
yeah. I have been the least critical of the campaign because I know what it's like to sit on the other side of that desk and listen to those criticisms, especially after a gut-wrenching loss. So I kind of stepped away from it because also me and Jacob was organizing in that campaign. We weren't just on the sidelines. We were actually phone banking. We were in the streets with the workers. And it was iffy at best on the phone banks. And that's not to take anything away from RWTSU. They done a fantastic job with the cards that they were dealt. But it was every call that I made was about a 50-50, pro against type person. I don't know. And here's the issue. Because the workers that we talked to, they said that they were turning over between 50 and 100 workers a week in that facility. That is in a 6,000 person facility. If the election drags on for a month or 6 weeks, you're talking about one fifth of the workforce in that short amount of time. And how can you keep up with this never-ending turnover? You can try to lock the workers in, or that can vote through the NLRB. That's a possibility, but I don't know that really works out good for you. You're not getting updated phone calls and things like that. So it's a nightmare, and it's going to be. I heard that y'all are organizing in New York, and I pray to God that they have some different idea than we did down here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David, something that the union said that was really wild to me was that from the time that that ballots were mailed out to the end of the election, they felt like as much as 25% of the workforce had been turned over. From the time that ballots were sent out to the time that voting closed. And that was that there were more people that left than the company's margin of victory, which was huge, you know, and folks that left, they can't vote, and the folks that are left working there are obviously going to be less dissatisfied, you know, and so there's a certain amount of maybe corporate gerrymandering there, and you know, it's just these high turnover facilities are just really, really hard to get a good base of organizing. You know, one of the criticisms was that they should have done more work and put in more time and they did it too quick. And it's like, well, you know, with 100% turnover every year, it almost has to be quick, right? Like, how do you do long-term organizing in a facility without giving them kind of almost a snap election? You know, it's really difficult to say what needs
and on
to
top
be
of
done.
That, Jacob, one of the most astonishing facts. So I volunteered on the campaign as well. I was really glad to phone bank folks and listen to them directly about what their experiences were down there, was to hear firsthand about how, you know, it wasn't the case that the RW didn't know how many people actually worked there when they filed with 1500 cards. What happened was, is that Amazon literally had the largest hiring spree in the history of the company after they did that, in order to flood the factory. And that's what got them the 5,800 number in order to, you know, which they then had to get a much, much higher threshold to win. So it's absolutely what Amazon threw at them is just kind of astonishing, astounding. It would be illegal in almost every other Western industrialized nation in the world. And it shows like how, the cards are just so stacked against working people. I also think that unions, you know, there's kind of the known knowns and the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns, right? To quote Rumsfeld. And this is one of the things that we do know, right? Is that when you go in, the boss is going to do absolutely everything they can to keep you from winning. It's a real question that we have to figure out in the labor movement, you know, is like, what is it going to take to win here? And I think that you're right. Like in the many decades that we've been trying to organize the South, we actually have not figured that out. So we've got our work cut out for us. And I think, you know, one of the lessons that I take from the campaign is that those folks had a ton of moxie. They really went into it. And I just, you know, I came out of it just inspired by their courage.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep that in mind, is that, and I know that we all do when we speak about it, but it can sometimes get lost in the wider world that these are real people with real material concerns on the line who are putting a lot of themselves into organizing, and it's not actually like a game to them. It's their lives, and that's why we do it. So you are listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming on your favorite podcast app. Today, we are celebrating our second annual post-May Day Labor Report with some awesome live guests. And we would love to hear comments or questions from our WBAI listening audience tonight, especially if we happen to have any union siblings out there listening live. The number to call is 212-209-2877. Once again, that's 212-209-2877. But first, it's our fundraising pitch. Where else can you find discussions like these where organizers and unionists talk frankly about how to defeat the boss? It certainly won't be on stations or outlets that are owned by the boss. That's why it's so important for unionists to support independent media so we can build solidarity and community through sharing stories and updates from our struggles without having to spare any boss's feelings. WBAI is listener supported, and this show is produced by volunteer labor. So if you're enjoying our show tonight, please consider contributing in the name of Revolutions Per Minute. To give to the station, you can call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950, or go to WBAI.org. And to all of our donors and supporters out there, thank you so much. We love you and we see you and we appreciate your support so much. So I'm wondering if we have any calls on the line. Nobody wants to talk to us about labor tonight. That's hard to believe. So I guess we have to see if we have any more opinions from our guests on Amazon, on the other union struggle that's high profile right now in Alabama, or anything else.
Okay, so
yeah, Amy, I'll
go ahead, Jacob.
Well, I'll just to kind of reiterate again the thing that I said with some data that I just remembered reading from. The StrikeWave is a really good place to go if you're looking for kind of data and information and statistics about the labor movement. But something that Connor Lewis on Twitter noted was that last year, I believe, had the highest union win rate in like 60 or 70 years, higher than any, even in the best, you know, time for union organizing, so to speak, where the union movement was growing more and more. But the problem was that we had fewer NLRB elections and fewer workers voting in NLRB elections than almost any year in American history. And so, you know, just to hit on what I said again, you know, it's important even if you get hit. If you get knocked down, it's important to get back up and keep fighting, because, you know, we're not going to beat the boss if we don't try to beat the boss, if we just allow them to roll over us. And, you know, that's not the way that they did it before. And even, you know, David said something about taking calculated shots. And yeah, we should be smart and we shouldn't just throw money away. But I think maybe the problem is that unions are even being too calculating, that they're not taking shots that may seem risky. You know, you're not going to do anything. High risk comes with high reward a lot of times. So anyway, David, you were about to say something?
Oh, actually, it looks like we've got a caller on the line, so we can hear from one of our listening audience. Hi, you're live with Revolutions Per Minute.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, this is William calling from East Orange, New Jersey. And I've been involved in politics, initially the anti-Vietnam War protest, 1969. And here's my question, which is important but real difficult. What do you think is a realistic time frame in the United States for building a working people's party that has power? Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling and for your question, William. Chris, David, or Jacob, would one of you like to respond?
I'm actually interested in what y'all have to say on that myself.
Yeah, I'm probably not the best. You know what? I'm going to default to Chris because I generally hate talking about politics. No disrespect to the caller, but I abhor it. So, yeah.
Spoken like a true wob. So, you know, I got to say, you know, I don't think you can have a labor party without labor. So, do we even have the base for a realistic working class party in this country if we don't have class consciousness among the working class? And I don't think you can have class consciousness among the working class if we're not engaged in rampant class struggle all across the country. So to my mind, you know, it's a lot of, you know, cart before the horse is what's typically happening here. I think we need a lot more unions. We need a lot more struggles. We need a lot more people willing to step up and fight the boss with their coworkers, with their neighbors. And I mean the boss in a big, big, way, right? So I'm talking about not just your employer. I'm talking about the bankers. I'm talking about the people that you rent from, your landlords. I'm talking about the people who make the decisions about where you live, how you get there, how you get to work, how you buy your groceries, like all of these things that impact everyday, you know, working class people are decisions that are made largely by a certain class of folks. And until people see the world in that way, it's going to be really hard to get them to join a party that's advancing those kinds of interests. I think that that's what made the Bernie Sanders campaign so incredibly important, was that he was capable of polarizing the issues that face us in this country in a way that made it clear, you know, that there's, you know, like we said in Occupy Wall Street, right, there's the 99% and the 1%, that there's a clear working class. He didn't talk about the middle class like Biden does. He talked about the working class, and he talked about corporations and billionaires who, you know, are in these positions of power and authority to make these decisions that, you know, impact all of us. So I think, you know, it's what Bernie's done has been really significant. It's really obviously helped to grow the ranks of DSA. And I'm glad that, you know, we're making the interventions where we can in the Democratic Party. But I think at the end of the day, like if we're going to rip off from them, if we're going to have a break and we're going to have something established, we really have to have some really powerful unions with a different set of politics that are independent, right, from the Democrats, that are rooted in the working class and that are being advanced in a very clear way that millions of people are getting behind.
Just what I, or Amy, were you about to say?
I was just about to say pass the PRO Act.
Well, that's, I think that's a crucial thing. And I want to just kind of add to what Chris is saying, because I think if also we kind of separate this question from the ballot line, and that's an entire different discussion. We are kind of seeing, I don't think it's always a question of, you know, we build one first and the other comes. I think we have to be building these things together. And I think that's what DSA is doing right now. Like, look where the labor movement has kind of made its most militant activity, where it's won the most gains in a city like Chicago, where the teachers union there has been fighting. They've not just been fighting for their higher wages, which they have been and important, but they've been fighting for their workplace conditions, for the city, for greater investment. And they've been building alliances alongside parents and students. And they're building a real labor movement that's seeing something that is more than just organizing for bread and butter, is organizing for the common good. And that's a place where you have now a socialist caucus on the city council. We're seeing this happen in New York, where you kind of have a different arrangement, where there's actually very high union density here in New York relatively to the rest of the country. And DSA is winning a bunch of elections. That's kind of also building up organization where DSA members are showing up to the strikes that are happening here, going to the picket lines, showing there in solidarity, coming there with food and mutual aid to strike support to kind of build this labor movement that's ready to fight. I think we're starting to see things like this happen. There's a lot more room to grow, and it's not something that's just we're gonna snap our fingers. It takes organizing, working, talking to people in your workplace, and also in as Chris said, it's gonna take struggle and struggle against the bosses and struggle against the state and who's often the boss, like when it comes to teachers.
Yes, and we will be taking more of your calls at the end of the show. So if you have any other comments or questions, just put them on ice and we'll open the phones again before we close out the show.
But now let's get back to our regularly scheduled discussion. But I really appreciate the question from the caller. So I'm going to go to Jacob and David for this one because of your kind of experience as radio host, and as we were just talking about in this pitch here at Revolutions Per Minute, we're very, very passionate about building up alternatives to capitalist-owned media and sort of like working-class institutions and media democratically controlled. So like as the only union talk show in Alabama, it seems like you're doing the same with Valley Labor Report. Can you speak a little bit to your inspiration behind starting the show? And what has been the response like from your community so far? And David, if you want to take that up first.
I will be happy to. It's a strange path we took. There was a lot of talk early on from Jacob about a leftist show, and then I kind of batted back the idea about how about doing like an organized labor / leftist show, and we kind of jumped on it. And from there, it's been a year actually this month. The contract expires at the end of this month, and I think the overwhelming response from the local community has been fair. We've had, as you can imagine, your listeners probably don't know, but we're on a Cumulus, the largest talk radio station in North Alabama. It's owned by Cumulus, and it is ultra conservative. 24 hours of the day, except for our 1.5 hour show on Saturdays. So needless to say, we get a lot of reactionary right calls on Saturday mornings asking what we're doing on these communists are doing on their radio station. And it's wonderful. The support in the labor community in general is really what has, really made me feel good. Like it was needed. And I think everybody knew it was needed, but nobody knew who was going to do it. And I'm proud that we've stepped up and done it, and I'll be stepping away at the end of this month, but I hope, what we've built, we can keep building off of that, and I can do some writing and maybe do some podcasts, kind of more on my free time, and Jacob and Adam are going to carry on and continue to do the wonderful work of preaching the gospel of labor.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, sparring with the kind of conservative callers, but also we've had a couple of interesting just native callers too. We have a reasonably sized audience online and across the state of Alabama, like David said, in the labor movement in Alabama. The Alabama AFL-CIO actually is a big sponsor of the show, and so we get a lot of folks outside of the listening area, but we've had some native listeners on WVNN, where folks that we didn't know that we hadn't reached online or through the labor movement in that way, that just happened to hear us and call in. And real big union folks. We've had folks call in that we didn't know, talking about, wins that they've had against the boss. There was one call that I really appreciated, said that he didn't appreciate our Democrat talking points, but he starting a union sounds pretty good, and he might like to do that. So I think the response from the community has been better than what you would think for being on a conservative radio, and then outside of the radio audience, it's been really good. The folks that have found us online and through the labor movement, the inspiration for doing a union show as opposed to a left wing type political talk show, we want to just change people's mind about that one issue, and really, if we can change people's mind about, okay, unions are good, then we think that their brothers and sisters in their union are going to have a better chance at talking them through other issues. And so that is because we're not going to be, like David said, it's 24/7 reactionary nonsense. We can't change their minds about everything in an hour and a half. If we could just plant a seed that maybe unions aren't what they're telling me they are, then their brothers and sisters might can have a better shot at doing the rest of the work.
That's such a great point, Jacob, in the sense that by becoming part of an organization, working class organization, institution, once you start, you know, you you start to experience that solidarity and you fight alongside people, and it can kind of in change the way that you see the world. And so it's incredible. And I think it's a really impressive that that's what you're focusing on. And it's gotta be hard. It's different than being here in New York. So I give a lot of credit to both of you. And Chris, just as someone who organizes with media workers here in New York City, and someone who also was, you know, part of Labor Notes, which is kind of its own sort of working class media operation, any thoughts on this question?
Yeah, so I'll just say, like, I love independent media, love Revolutions Per Minute. In these times, Strike Wave, Labor Notes, independent journals like Sarah Jaffe, there's so much good work happening out there that I think we should all embrace. And it's really crazy to think that, you know, in the 1950s, there were literally hundreds of labor newspapers published by unions and central labor councils all across the country, giving just labor's point of view on the issues of the day, locally, nationally, and globally. And literally none of that exists anymore. It's all been wiped out. And what newspapers we do have, and I just mean like the, you know, the regular old press, right, across the country, they're either closing up shop or they're being increasingly bought up by like one of five major companies, typically hedge funds, right, that then dismantle them, or, you know, a handful of billionaires like Jeff Bezos, who bought the Washington Post as a power play, right, in order to influence national politics. And so the result is that, you know, increasingly what we're seeing over time is that we have far fewer full-time journalists out there that are keeping an eye on and reporting on local community news that matters, right? Going to your local school board, going to city hall, being able to keep an eye on politicians and local business leaders and saying what they're doing and how it's impacting you. And so I think that in the long run, what we're really facing a crisis, a news crisis in this country. And what we have to see is that journalism is actually a public service that requires public support to be sustainable. And that means we need to tax the big tech companies like Amazon and Google and Facebook, who are sucking up all the ad revenue that a lot of these outlets used to rely on. And we need publicly owned and publicly controlled, democratically controlled media outlets that can then provide quality journalism to our communities. So my hats are off to all the independent, media outlets that are out there, both the radical and mainstream ones. But I also think that there's a real desperate need for us in our country to recognize that if we want to be able to hold elected officials accountable, if we want to be able to hold corporate and business interests accountable, that we have to have a huge apparatus that doesn't currently exist. We have so many, news deserts. And that has to be funded by all of us, right? We have to be able to, especially the rich, they need to pay their fair share in order for us to have a functioning and thriving democracy.
That's a really great point, Chris. And I think there's something to the fact that you could also think of this as like a publicly funded and then democratically controlled on like a local level. But there needs to be money that's not coming from Jeff Bezos to kind of not maybe control what people are thinking, but kind of shape the narrative. The left, the labor movement needs media, and there's a long history of that. And we're coming to the last 15 minutes of the show or so, and so we kind of just maybe hit on the big picture stuff, because we were talking about the loss in Bessemer, but there's also been some very encouraging wins, especially over the past couple of weeks. In Maine, in the hospital, 2,000 workers joining a union, one of the biggest kind of single unit private sector wins in a long time, win at a charter school. There's another big hospital victory. So there is a lot happening in unionization. There's strikes happening in here in New York. So maybe I'll go to David first. Like, what do you have your eyes on for this upcoming year? Now that maybe Amazon is over, the minor strike still happening in Alabama. What are you thinking about in terms of labor movement?
So me personally, short term, I am wrapped up in the United Mine Workers strike in Brookwood, just a little bit north of Tuscaloosa, where there are 1,100 workers currently fighting the boss on the picket line for their 6 week straight that hadn't been on strike in over 20 years. So that I'm really personally invested in seeing that through. They took a $7 to $8 an hour pay cut about on the last contract, and all they're asking for is to get that pay cut back now that the company's solvent. And I think that's important for us to win in the state of Alabama. The long term is this week, a year out from this week, my local will be going into contract negotiations. We're electing the committee this upcoming month, and we just come off a strike on the last contract, and I have every intention to do everything I can to get our members out on strike for this contract, which is completely different than what every other business rep out there is going to want you to do. But I don't really care what the business reps want you to do. I want our members to build working power in their facility. And these baby steps of striking every contract and letting them know we're not going away is, to me, that's important. And I think when we continue to strike, even if we get a good contract, we're going on strike, then I think you start building that revolutionary mentality that everybody's wanting to see. So that's kind of my sales pitch for long term.
Well, speaking of revolutionary mentality, that's what we always try to have here on Revolutions Per Minute. And we are coming to the end of tonight's show, but we do have a couple more minutes for another call or two from listeners. So if you have a comment or question, our topic tonight is the labor movement. Please call 212-209-2877. Once again, that is 212-209-2877. And while we wait for a call, Jacob or Chris, anything to add?
Well, if you all don't mind me touting the News Guild just a little bit, you know, where I work. So the News Guild nationally ran 47 elections last year and won all 47 of them. I feel like have just been expanding, you know, exponentially, and it's been really incredible to see. And that, again, like, is because of the declining conditions in the industry, right? And combined with so many young people coming into the workforce with shifted expectations and different politics, it's a very exciting place to be. You know, in our local here, you know, we had some reform leadership that took over in the local, and they're taking it in a really transformative direction. And we're looking to become a striking local again to really build that media worker power in our industry. We haven't had a strike since 1993. And, you know, unfortunately, it looks like it's getting close, and we're probably going to have one at Condé Nast if they don't come to the table and bargain in good faith. So the New Yorker and Ars Technica and Pitchfork have been bargaining for over 2 years for our first contract. Absolutely terrible and outrageous that that's happening. And you see, like, we see this a lot in New York, is that there is a lot of liberal employers who like to, you know, tout their progressive politics. And then as soon as it comes to their own workers, well, then they're just a union buster like anybody else. You know, so keep an eye out for that.
Yes, so glad that you said that, Chris. And I really appreciate your comments as well about the conditions that the workers are working under. You know, I think we see, especially with sort of quote unquote sexy industries like media or publishing, there's sort of this urge to be like, well, why do the kids like unions? Maybe it's because they've seen it on Twitter or on TikTok. And it's like, no, they like unions because they want to improve their working conditions just like any other worker. It's not actually because unions are quote unquote cool, although of course unions are cool. So if you have any thoughts or questions for our live guest tonight, we do have time for maybe one more call. The number is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. And actually, while we wait for a phone call, if we do get any tonight, I'd love to ask Chris, David, and Jacob, what are your recommendations for folks who are interested maybe in getting more involved in the labor movement or just following struggles? We've talked a lot about various media outlets that people can plug into. But beyond that, what are your suggestions for folks who are out there listening and want to get off their couch?
So this is Chris. I'll say one of the best resources that you can check out is workerorganizing.org, which is a joint project of the Democratic Socialists of America and the United Electrical Workers of the UE. And what they have really put together are incredible resources for you to get started, to talk to your coworkers about unionizing in your workplace. They also have really great ways for you to communicate with organizers all across the country who will literally call you up. We do Zoom all the time, right? And talk to you through the steps, how to do it, how to keep an underground campaign going, when to go public, you know, how to identify the issues your coworkers care about, how to think about organizing. So, you know, again, that's workerorganizing.org. And I really, really recommend that people check that out.
Yeah, and I think that sounds good. I'd recommend if you're in a workplace with a union to get active in it. If you're not paying your dues, you're not a member yet, like what are you doing? You need to make sure you're doing that, but start going to the meetings. Start figuring out what your coworkers and your brothers and sisters what their issues are, and working with them to win on those issues. If you're not in a union, then start thinking about going to one. There are lots of organizer trainings put on by Labor Notes and other people. You should be able to find one that you can go to, and after you've gone to an organizer training, or even before you do that, maybe reach out to your local labor council, reach out to your local IWW chapter, get to know the unions in your area and in your industry, see which international union best fits you and your coworkers kind of personally and ideologically, right? Like maybe, you know, there's a union that is ostensibly ideologically similar, but you don't really mesh with the people there, right? Maybe. So, you know, get to know the folks in your area and start, you know, making a plan. I think the best way, or one of the best ways to learn is by doing. So that's what I would recommend.
Yeah, I'll just piggyback off what Jacob said. Labor Notes, and it's not because Chris is here. We love Chris. He's one of our sons of the South. We hate that he's in New York now, but y'all got a great advocate up there. Labor Notes. In these times, Jacobin, there's so many good online resources. Like Jacob said, the industrial workers of the world, I promise you that we know there's a chapter in New York City. Reach out to them. They're a little bit more radical than what you may be used to, but they are great folks, and they will put you on a good path to build power in your workplace and that's what it's all about, is to gain wins for your fellow comrades in your workplace. If we're not doing that, we're going backwards.
Absolutely. Well said. And I'd love to make that the last word of tonight's post-May Day labor extravaganza. There's certainly so much to talk about. We could do this every night for a week, and maybe we should. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute. We are on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, please email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. You can find us on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com, or on Twitter at NYCRPM. I'm Amy Wilson, here with Jack Devine, Chris Brooks, and David and Jacob of Valley Labor Report. We all thank you so much for listening. And remember, the workers united will never be defeated. Catch you later. We'll see you in the streets.
And on the picket line.
Yes.